The triad is a lively scene. As springtime dances in, homeowners are ready to sell, and their built equity is a win. Great homes will be for sale, with a new deal behind each door. The Sharp Mortgage Team is excited to help in the spring of 2024. With wisdom and commitment, we'll help you chart your move. A quick conversation and pre-approval will get you in the groove. With pre-approval secured, you'll be steps ahead, you'll see, ready to embrace the home buying journey with confidence and glee. From cozy cottages to sprawling estates, you'll find the perfect fit, and your real estate agent's skill set help and determined grit. With a wealth of knowledge and a heart for your buying success, we'll navigate the housing market, ensuring nothing less. Don't let the media fool you. You deserve a wonderful new nest. With the Sharp Mortgage Team, you're poised for nothing less than the best. Embrace the warmth of springtime, flowers, and skies of blue. Partner with the Sharp Mortgage Team. We're always here for you.
I'm Algernon Cash, and you're locked in. Welcome back. It's been a long several weeks. I know you all have been missing me, but today we've got some fresh content here for you. I've got a new friend that's sitting in with me, Eric Peck, who is an experienced brewer. He's he did a stint of 8 years at Brooklyn Brewery in New York. Mm-hmm. He's also the current secretary of the Triad Brewers Alliance. He's a recognized speaker in the brewer community, and he's also the owner of Radar Brewing right here in downtown Winston-Salem. Eric, how are you, man? Thank you for locking in.
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Well, let's get started by talking about Radar, because you guys are a somewhat relatively new brewery in downtown. I mean, compared to some of the other ones that's been around a little bit longer. Talk to my audience about Radar. What inspired you to start it, and what makes you unique from all the other breweries downtown?
So, yeah, it's definitely one of the newer breweries in Winston. I think we're the second newest, and we've been open for 4 years. Hasn't really been a real 4 years. We opened up January of 2020, and so we had a good year and a half that we were just trying to navigate all the COVID lockdown pandemic stuff, and so it took a long time for us to find kind of our regular base operation. So even within that 4 years, it hasn't been a true 4 years. But there are two owners to Radar Brewing Company. It's myself and my partner Aaron Wall. His background, he went from Natty Greens to Foothills, and that's where we met. We were both at Foothills Brewing at the production site at the same time. He left there to go to Wicked Weed, and with his experience in the production side, with my experience on the business and taproom side, just thought it would be a good fit and the right time to open up our own brewery. Wanted to do something different, wanted to add to the beer scene in Winston-Salem by doing more small batch beers, by doing more Belgian-inspired beers, by doing more experimental stuff and food-inspired beers, and doing it all within a space that felt like more of a modern, mid-century modern, contemporary tap room, a space that felt a little bit different than the other breweries that were already here.
Well, if you're listening, you can already tell that my friend Eric, he knows a lot about beer. And so that's what we're going to be talking about today. There's some interesting trends that are happening within the beer community. You and I've actually talked about some of this offline, and I was really impressed with some of your knowledge about what's happening within that community. So I'm excited for this conversation. Now, Aaron, I think I met him. Is he like the main brewmaster? What do you call that person that's the main guy?
So we would say head brewer. You could say brewmaster. I mean, he's really responsible for everything production wise. So we talk about different beers that we could have coming out on a seasonal basis, or something cool, something new, something that we need inventory wise. And then from there, it's really Aaron from start to finish as far as the production and purchasing ingredients and packaging beer. And then for me, it's really just the business side of the business. So it's all of the on-premise hospitality wing of the business, marketing and social media and sales and wholesale distribution and working with accounts. And so our lines are kind of drawn between the business side and production side.
Now, you mentioned Foothills. So you did a stint there. From my audience, I mean, if you follow me, you know that I spent a lot of time out at Foothills Brewing. Chef Shane is a great friend of mine. His wife, Dina, actually, I used to be on the board of governors for the Piedmont Club, and Dina was our service manager. So I've actually known Dina for about 20 years. So just great, great couple. I was actually at Foothills at the tasting room this past weekend. I was judging a chili competition. So we had 27 home cooks or amateur chefs from all around the region come in and make chili. And so I spent several hours drinking beer and eating chili. Best way you can spend a Sunday afternoon in January. So it was a lot of fun. I've got a lot of respect for the folks at Foothills. And the reason why I always say that is, you know, back when this whole craft brewery concept was still relatively new, they were someone that came into the community, made an investment on 4th Street. There was really no restaurants in downtown. And they came in and introduced a new restaurant, but then also introduced this concept of craft brewery. And I always thought it was really interesting. Prior to Foothills being here, I didn't know anything beyond Bud Light and Budweiser and Michelob. So I always give them a lot of credit for sort of bringing that concept here to Winston. But over the years, though, I mean, there's been a lot more breweries created. I mean, you guys are, what, the sixth or seventh one to come into downtown, just downtown alone?
That number might even be up to eight now. It's sometimes hard to keep track. And it's funny because there's so many different ways or waves to the craft beer expansion. So kind of started late 70s, early 80s. You had people that were all over the U.S. A lot of them were in some bigger markets, or at least in bigger states like California or Washington or New York. There were about 30 breweries at the time, and there were a handful of industry gatherings throughout the year where everybody would kind of get together. And anybody looking to open up a brewery, you were relying on the expertise of a very small handful of breweries that were already established. There were only about 30 in the U.S. And this explosion kind of happened or started in the late 70s, early 80s. So there were people that had careers in other industries that were looking to do something else, that were looking to retire or to move on, like in their 50s, to something else. And that's how you got like the Boston Beer Company, or I worked at Brooklyn Brewery for a long time, or places like Sierra Nevada. And so that was like the first wave of Mavericks in the late 70s, early 80s. And then from there, sometime in the 90s, that continued. People started to see the success of people that started in the late 70s and early 80s, and more states and more markets really opened up with pioneers in those states with a singular craft brewery in a market, say like Winston-Salem. And after that, everybody saw the success of that wave. There started to be a lot more investor models, people doing it just as an investment, didn't really want to do the day-to-day operations of a brewery, but just wanted to have it as a profitable investment. And that led to a whole other wave of brewery openings. And then there was a wave after that where idealism started to come back to the craft beer industry with the youngest generation that from a historical context had seen the late 70s and early 80s and the passion that first wave of brewery owner operators had and wanted to do the same thing, but on a much smaller scale, didn't have
like
any,
what they call small batch brewing. Yeah.
Right. And didn't have any goals of big wholesale distribution or any regional or multi-state or national aspirations. And that's how we kind of got the last wave of breweries. And now there's over 9,500 breweries in the U.S. And I remember it was a big deal when we reached the 3,000 mark in that short amount of time. It's gone from 3,000 to 9,500.
It's time to get serious about your financial future. It's never too early, but it could be too late to get started. And that's oftentimes the hardest part, getting started. How much do I save? Where do I invest? Do I save for college or retirement? How much for each? And who do I talk to about it all? Okay, we'll keep things simple for now and help you answer the last one. we recommend you begin with a local financial advisor. And that's Jennifer Johnson of Three Magnolias Financial Advisors. She'll sit down with you for a complimentary introductory consultation and go over all of your questions. Get started on the path to achieving your financial goals. Visit 3magnoliasfinancialadvisors.com or call 336-701-1600. Get comfortable with your financial future. 3 Magnolias Financial Advisors, retirement, financial planning, and investments. Securities offered through Cetera Advisor Networks, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through 3 Magnolias Financial Advisors. 3 Magnolias Financial Advisors and Cetera Advisor Networks are not affiliated. Cetera is under separate ownership from any other named entity.
Well, you've spent about 18 years in the industry, so you've seen a lot. I almost compare it to sort of like church. You know, one member of the church thinks they've got a better way to do it, so they go start their own church. I guess you get these guys and gals who all of a sudden say, hey, I think I've got a better secret to the sauce here, and I'm going to go start my own brewery. Now, one thing that I thought was really interesting, I spoke about how when Foothills came into Winston, you would go into the grocery store. You never saw a craft beer, at least not here in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Maybe in New York and larger markets you would have seen one. So with Radar Brewing Company, is that your same strategy? Are you hoping to not only have your retail operation, which is here in downtown Winston, but you're also trying to be in the grocery stores available for wholesale too? Or,
well, one of the more fun things that you can do with a brewery, and it's, you know, when we talk about it, it's such a unique business model compared to other business models, because we do have production and we have wholesale distribution, we have a whole business to business wing of the company, but then we also have everything on premise, our tap rooms, the hospitality side of the business, and that's our whole business to consumer wing of the business. And then also branding is so important, where if you're a bar, you're not necessarily building a brand, but once you have a product and once you get into wholesale distribution, the brand becomes really important. And so there's always a lot going on with breweries and brewery tap rooms and events and things like that. For us, we do put effort into building that brand. We do put effort into local wholesale distribution. So some of the Lowe's Foods around here, some of the bottle shops,
so that's
some of the bars
now
and restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But we don't plan to do much outside of about a 1.5 hour radius from Winston. We do have a small system. It's great for us because the beer is really fresh. We get to brew more often. There are more iterations of the same recipe, so you can really perfect different recipes a lot faster than you would with a bigger system. And now the way the industry has gone, it's so tough to compete with wholesale distribution and trying to compete for that grocery store shelving, that the focus more is now on premise with your tap rooms and possibly opening up multiple tap rooms around the state or in different markets. But it's really about controlling the product from start to finish and having the whole customer journey just be with you, as opposed to selling it to a distributor that may or may not take care of it, or to a retail account that, once it's in their hands, you have less control over. It's really about staying with the customer from start to finish now.
And sort of more of the micro approach versus the macro.
Right.
You know, I'm a huge fan of Lowe's. I shop at Lowe's. So, if you're in my audience and you're looking for a great grocery store, yes, that's a plug for Lowe's Food. They are not a sponsor. They should be a sponsor. but I'm just a huge fan of Lowe's. I love the whole to-go program. I started doing that back in COVID, and I have not actually been inside of a grocery store in many years because of that. So big shout out to Lowe's. They have your beer available. Mm-hmm. So if my audience is looking to sample or try something from Radar Brewing Company, they can actually get that at Lowe's. Lowe's has a tap room. And mm-hmm. I always thought that was sort of a cool business model. I go to the one out on Robin Hood Road, and they've now started offering food. Oftentimes on the weekends, you can get wings for 33 cents. You can get ribs for $5. So you can also do that and then grab you a beer from Radar and check out what they're doing as well. You know, I used to do some work for Red Oak. That was probably one of the first craft breweries that I started seeing popping up in the grocery stores, at least around in our area and region. And so when they were growing their campus out there on the other side of Greensboro, I actually did some finance work for them many, many, many years ago. I recall them sort of running into some hurdles and obstacles related to the regulations associated with craft brewing. You spend some time at the Triad Brewers Alliance. I mean, where are regulations at now? Have they sort of caught up to the momentum that's really happening within the industry?
There have been a lot of changes recently, and a lot of it has to do with what we're allowed to do on premise with our tap rooms. And so ABC is now trying to get a little more 21st century and recognize that some of the legislation just didn't represent where we were at now and had carryover from different decades that didn't really apply to today. So I think in that way, ABC is really starting to make things a lot easier. When it comes to wholesale distribution, which is what Red Oak would have run into, one of the things that they ran into was there was a cap on how much you could self-distribute.
That's right.
So you were up to 25,000 barrels. And a lot of people, once you get to like 5,000 barrels, you usually sell the rights to distribute your beer because moving beer around is such a huge operation that most people across the U.S., once you get to like 5,000 barrels, it's a good time to go ahead and sell the rights to distribute your beer. But then there are other people that really want to self-distribute a lot more than that, and Red Oak would have been an example. And they have raised that cap from 25,000 barrels, and I can't remember exactly what it is now, but you can self-distribute more than you could previously. But I think COVID was a big accelerator for ABC to start to make things a little bit easier for producers to thrive and to succeed. And a lot of the things that are on the books, too, comes out of the end of Prohibition. At the end of Prohibition, regulators really wanted to protect wholesalers and distributors, and they didn't want these big macro breweries to be able to control the supply chain from start to finish. And they didn't want that kind of anti-competitive behavior out there. And so they really gave power to wholesalers and distributors. And now everything is so different where the producers are the small ones. The producers are the small, like mom and pop operations. And the distributors are the big, huge companies. And you have Miller houses and you have Bud houses or AB InBev houses. And so one of the things that producers really try to push each year with legislation is trying to give a little bit more autonomy or power or something to help us as producers, because we really are just very small businesses, most of us are now.
Who's ready for movie night? Our friends at the Ginther Group Real Estate are proud to sponsor another season of Innovation and Cinema at Bailey Park in downtown Winston-Salem's Innovation Quarter. Up first, 1984's Never-Ending Story on Friday, April 19th. Bring your chair or blanket to Bailey Park for a great night of cinema from Aperture and food from a variety of local vendors. Pre-film fun begins at 6:30 and the movie begins at dark. These magical movie nights are made possible by the Ginther Group, the real estate experts we trust and showcase here on the Triad Podcast Network. Check their social media for info on each upcoming movie night. And for your real estate needs, call 336-283-8689 or visit theginthergroup.com. Buying, selling, investing, or just learning. Whatever you need, start now. And like me, you can become a Ginther Group client for life.
Well, I really like the sort of micro approach that you all take. I think that's very interesting. You talked about acquisitions, or I guess you reach a certain limit or level. A lot of times the smaller brewer might be looking to get acquired. Wicked Weed made some news and noise some years ago when they got acquired by, I guess it's Budweiser or the company that owns Budweiser. There was sort of like a mixed reaction to that. I mean, I'm sure from the founder's perspective, it was a great thing for them. They wanted to make money on it. But a lot of their fans and customers sort of didn't like the idea that this large company would be taking over Wicked Weed. Talk a little bit about that. I mean, is that sort of the exit strategy typically for a craft brewer?
It might be, and it's probably more common now than it would have been previously. Previously, there wasn't really an exit strategy. These companies, if you started a brewery in the late 70s, early 80s, in a place like Boston or New York or the Northwest, there really wasn't an exit strategy. You were just always going to have this business. It was going to continue to go on. Some of them looked to pass it on to their children. And so it was something that was always going to exist. And now with how competitive it is and how many breweries are out there, you do, like other businesses, you do start to think about exit strategies, even as you're forming the company, kind of think about what your end goals are with the company. And so I think for a lot of people, the exit strategy might be simply to have it, to be able to draw personal income from it for 10 to 15 years, kind of pay off all your loans. You have this equipment to sell at the end of it and look to sell it to somebody else or be able to walk away from it at that point. And so with the whole Wicked Weed deal, it was a large amount of money. It was a big high profile case at the time, in an era where it felt like AB InBev, especially, and that's the Budweiser company, that's the Belgian company that it is now, is AB InBev, is it was a high profile thing. It was at a time when it felt like AB InBev was buying up a good amount of breweries around the U.S. and drawing into its craft portfolio just to be able to ultimately control anything that you were going to be able to get as a consumer. And so it upset a lot of people because Wicked Weed was a company that I think people, especially in North Carolina, took a lot of pride in and felt a strong connection to. The quality of the product was so good. Mm. Their marketing was so good. The brand was great. They were doing really exciting things. And so all of a sudden, what it felt like when you were going to buy Wicked Weed, that you weren't supporting a North Carolina company, it really disappointed a lot of people. From the inside the industry, what it does to a company like that is it gets you resources that you didn't have access to before. And it can ultimately make the product better. People that were within Wicked Weed stayed within the company, within their roles. It was still the same people making it and, you know, essentially running the company. So it's just a difference between what it feels like from the outside or what it means from the inside.
Well, I definitely thought they had a great product. I used to be the CFO at J&S Cafeteria, and we had three restaurants in Asheville. Mm-hmm. So I spent a lot of time in Asheville, and I tell you, there would almost be a wait at times to get inside a Wicked Weed. I mean, that's how popular they are or were. I haven't been up there recently. I always thought that was an interesting story. You know, anytime I've hung out at some of these craft breweries, it seems like a lot of the business and the sales is fueled by the younger generation. You know, oftentimes they're there with their friends, their dogs, their kids. You see a little bit of mix of everything. Talk about the shifting habits of that younger generation, because I know one of the things we talked about offline is it sounds like young people are drinking less beer in exchange for more cocktails, things like Manhattans and the kind of things I think they probably see in the movies and television. But how's that impacting the industry?
It's had a huge impact. So 2023 in general was a down year for the beer industry. On average, brewery tap rooms across the U.S. were down about 15%, which I think surprised a lot of people. So now for 2024, when we're making projections, they're a lot more conservative, and I think we're better prepared to take on what a year like 2023 might look like. Again, just with below the line thinking as far as how we can decrease some expenses here and there to be able to hit the profitability that you want. In general, though, the craft beer boom was really supported by people now that are in their 50s and 60s who, for them, had a long beer-drinking lifetime before there was craft beer. And then also now people that are in their 30s and 40s that kind of grew up with, in their beer drinking age, grew up with some kind of craft beer out there, and then seeing it expand and seeing it grow the way that it has. But now people that are in their 20s or even early 30s, they don't have the same drinking habits. They drink a lot less. They do tend to get into spirits and cocktails at a much higher rate than the two generations before them did. And part of that is like some healthier lifestyle trends. Part of it is a decrease just overall in alcohol consumption. Part of it is different things that they're getting into, whether it's any kind of like CBD, THC drinks or gummies or anything like that. People in general are going out less. There are fewer after work drinks as we get out of COVID. More and more people are working from home. There's less of like an after work drink culture. So there's a lot of stuff going on.
A lot of different variables.
Yeah, that's kind of led to where we are now.
Well, I am going out less and drinking less beer, but that's because I'm getting older and I just find myself at home a lot more often nowadays. If you're just now joining the program, my name is Algernon Cash. You are locked in. The other voice that you hear with me today is Eric Peck, who is the co-owner of Radar Brewing Company. You know, as I get into these sort of final minutes here, Eric, I mean, a lot of what you shared has been a wealth of knowledge. You talked about the year being down last year for your industry, down 15%. So where do you see the future? Where do you see the industry going as we continue to move forward? Because I don't see any slowdown. I mean, it seems like to me, you know, every quarter or every few months I hear about a new brewery opening.
So where we're at right now, we've kind of plateaued or matured as an industry is what we talk about. So there are still openings, but those openings are almost equal with within the state last year, almost equal with the closures. So now there's not a net increase in breweries that are out there. We've kind of plateaued. You're going to see probably more closures than openings over the next few years. So the number, total number of breweries out there will probably decrease a little bit. There are people that are getting into partnerships or mergers or companies buying other companies up or breweries just closing. There's a lot of used equipment for sale right now. And so there's going to be a little bit of that. But I think the biggest thing that we're going to see just as customers is we're going to see diversification. So people are going to get more into food. They're going to get more into starting in August, brewery tap rooms got the ability to add liquor and to have spirits without a kitchen. So having tap rooms that have more cocktail programs and any other thing that we can think of to make or to take advantage of these great spaces that we have to just kind of diversify what we offer the communities that we're in.
Well, I'm sure that you're going to be working hard at Radar to stay ahead of those trends and those changes so that you guys continue to be viable and sustainable. My audience, you guys can also help to make sure this industry stays sustainable and viable. You know, I'm a huge proponent of supporting local. I think supporting locally owned businesses is critically important, whether it's a brewery or the coffee shop or the dress shop. I mean, you know, having that local economy is really, really important. So I want to encourage my audience, if you're out this weekend or out anytime and you want to get a nice cold beer, I want you to go down to Radar Brewing Company and check out what Eric Peck and Aaron and the rest of the team are doing down there. If my audience wanted to come visit with you, tell them a little bit about where you're located, your social media, how can they really start joining your community?
Yep. So you can follow us at Radar Brewing Company on Facebook or Instagram. We're open 7 days a week in the Industry Hill neighborhood of Winston, which is a great neighborhood because you can park in one spot and easily walk to multiple breweries or restaurants. So on 9th Street, downtown Winston-Salem, in the Industry Hill neighborhood, open 7 days a week, usually until about 10 or 11 o'clock on the weekdays. Always have different events and activities and food trucks out there. Yeah, we hope to see everybody there. We love being a part of Winston.
I love that endorsement. And for my audience, if you were listening closely, he actually encouraged you to come down and support the neighborhood. He didn't necessarily say come just support his business, but he's also trying to help promote and encourage you to support the neighborhood, which are actually his competitors. But, you know, what's so great about locally owned businesses is that oftentimes local owners and operators don't take that perspective. They really believe in the concept of a rising tide lifts all boats. And so I want to encourage you all to go to the Industry Hill neighborhood while you're down there. Make sure you drop in and check out Radar Brewing Company. And to my audience, as always, thank y'all for locking in with me. I'm so glad to be back with some fresh content. So make sure you stay tuned to WTOB, because this is where you can learn more about what's happening with statewide business and legislative issues. Make sure you are locking in every Sunday morning, because that's where I broadcast. But if you happen to miss me there, hopefully you are subscribed to my podcast. And of course, you can download the Locked In Show on Apple, Spotify, Pandora, wherever you get your favorite podcasts. You can lock in there. And until next time, as always, y'all stay locked in.